Real quickly, why were you so radioactive? Why was the newspaper after you so much? And this was part of it. Why?
Well, early on in my administration, one of the guys who had supported us was a fellow by the name of J.B. Bennett in Okmulgee. J.B. had a water park there, and he was a former legislator, and he desperately wanted to be the head of tourism. He sort of made that clear all along. I was freaked out about having any conversations about anybody because I knew that was not appropriate. But J.B. was unrelenting in his efforts to support us and was always doing interesting things and unique things and was not a bad politician. But one of the things that he apparently did, I noticed that this decrepit water park all of a sudden during this campaign started having all kinds of capital projects occurring to it every time I'd be there for an event. Suddenly he was improving the water park and making it a lot better in Okmulgee. But it turns out, in my view, what was going on was that he was collecting cash from people under the pretense of those being contributions to our campaign and taking that cash and spending it on his water park. And then telling these people that, yeah, he had arranged for them to get a certain job or this, that, or the other. It's kind of hard to tell, if you look at the stories, which ones are purely made up and which ones he actually deceived. There was a carpet layer, for example, who said he had been promised a job at OSBI as an investigator. I had left my checkbook wallet. I'd misplaced it. I'm going to be charitable and say I'd misplaced it. He had taken it and copied it and tried to find things suspicious in it that he tried to make a big deal out of. This guy was like a terrorist. He was involved in the campaign. We were very reluctant to put him in charge of tourism, although he had some qualifications for that. He ran a water park. He served on the tourism committee when he was in the legislature. But at the time, we just weren't sure he was up to it. So I had a conversation with him. I said, J.B., I'm going to give you a shot at this. We're going to ask you to run the tourism, but we want a tight rein on this, and we don't want any funny business. Almost immediately, he began, I heard a story where somebody gave him a fancy rifle in return for something. He went over and toured their offices one day, and he had some very attractive women that he had hired, and he was making salacious comments in my presence to them. It was just so inappropriate and unprofessional. And then we were hearing these stories, and so early on, I brought him in and said, J.B., as I said, we're going to try this, and this didn't work out, and so I'm going to set you aside. Well, he went crazy. He got a couple of colleagues. We had a young man who was involved in our campaign who had a terrible addiction, and we weren't aware of that at the time. So he started disappearing on us. When we figured out that he had an addiction, Ron and I, in that campaign, still didn't have any money. And we said, we will pay for you to go to a rehab center in Oklahoma City. If you will check yourself in there, we'll pay the bill. And if you come out of there with a clean bill of health, you can continue the campaign. Otherwise, you can't. He lasted about a day and then he ran off. And so we just said, you can't be involved in the campaign. Well, he showed up on the fringes of it, helping JB and all this. So because both of them had essentially been fired by me, the two of them conspired. And these were the guys that went after Ellis Edwards back in the day. These were the guys, this other chap, that just did a marvelous job. They had a good relationship with press people and others, and they were really expert at it. So they kept a negative story going all the time. The Daily Oklahoman was very eager. Daily Oklahoman ran two negative editorials on me daily in the last stages of that campaign. They tried everything they could do. They've got a big editorial the day after that says, "We told you so," which is a story about their friends saying he was going to win anyway, you know. And so Ed Gaylord, who I met with right after I got elected, I said, look, I'm really fiscally conservative. I'm a penny-pinching guy, but I'm socially going to be pretty liberal on things, and so you're going to like some of the stuff I do and not always the rest. He came out of there and told Lee Allen Smith, he said, you know, he's a funny guy. He wanted to know why I subscribed to the Dallas Morning News, which I did not subscribe to the Dallas Morning News. So he had all these images. He thought that I had something to do with downplaying his roping arena outside of Oklahoma City. But anyway, I went out of my way to try to calm him down. And for a moment, it looked like that was going to work. But the minute he saw blood and water, he went crazy, hired former FBI people, put together a five-person investigative team. They went after us tooth and tong and kept a negative story in the paper, none of which proved to be true throughout the process. And so ultimately, after Sean's death, You know, I just needed to end this. And so they basically made up something that I could plead to. It was a misdemeanor. And even then I went down to the courthouse and very carefully wrote out a statement that made it clear that if I had received anything into our campaign, it was without my knowledge. We never put anything in paper, but I needed to end this because I was afraid this was going to further damage other members of my family.
Well, let me just say that you were accused, and this is what you're talking about, of election violations, that you conspired to hide $18,000 in campaign donations by attributing them to someone else. Mm-hmm. This is what you've been talking about, right?
Right.
And at the end of that, you asked prosecutors what they wanted to end this, and that's what you've just said. How can we bring this to an end?
Yeah.
Again, what did they tell you?
What they said is, okay, well, you signed these contribution reports that had these amounts that we had no idea that somebody had given somebody else money to give. The records will show, and it's been well documented, that we were terrified about this, and early on were auditing our books, and we gave back something like $12,000 over the course of the campaign because we just didn't trust it. At one point, somebody handed one of our aides in the campaign a big envelope down in Ada or someplace, and we got back to Oklahoma City. It had a bunch of cash in it. I think it was like $5,000. We called him up and we said, who contributed? He said, it's just walking around money. It doesn't have to be attributed. So I put the young man who had taken the envelope, we told him to get a butt in a car and drive that money back to Ada and give it back to them and get a receipt for it that you returned it, which offended them, you know, to no end. I had a guy call me after the primary, a banker, a prominent banker in northern Oklahoma, that called and said, hey, I had this deal with Wes Watkins. I gave him $5,000, which was the maximum legal contribution. He said, to be the adjutant general. And he said, and the good deal about that is I'm only going to be that for 2 years, and so you can sell it twice. This is what he said to me on the phone. I'm stunned, so I'm just blank. And I can hear him say something like, oh, I'm sorry. And I said, we don't do that sort of thing. We don't sell jobs. He apologized and hung up. So we were, I don't want to say we were righteous about it, but we tried to be very, very careful, refunded substantial amount of money during the campaign. The idea that we knew about this, to this day, the person that was responsible for the final numbers, Richard Bell in Norman, Oklahoma, to this day, Richard doesn't maintain clearly that we knew. We had more money coming in than you could count. It was clear that we were going to beat Bill Price. And Richard Bell insisted on seeing me. I'm driving through Shawnee. He's at a hotel off the highway. I sat down and he said, so you want me to raise money? I said, Richard, you do whatever you want to do. Thank you for your help and support. I was very uncomfortable with it. I got in the car with a chap who later became a member of the court and just said, boy, that was the most uncomfortable conversation. Had I gone to trial, that guy would have testified what I said immediately after that. And it would have also been testified to that I didn't sign those documents. That's always signed by staff. Immediately after this whole episode, the legislature passed a law saying that candidates no longer had to sign their forms because there could be anything in there. Mm-hmm. Bill Clinton told me at one point, he said, I can't imagine being held criminally responsible for the actions of your contributors, because there were 10,000 contributors. There was money coming in every day. And when you lay those facts out, it's just completely irrational. But I needed to end this because I was afraid of further damage to the family. So I didn't know enough, and my attorneys, I don't think, were quite on the ball enough to be able to say Alford plea to me. I should have gone down and said an Alford plea. I actually had a long conversation, though, with Mike Turpin and the attorneys about, isn't it perjury if I go down there and say I'm guilty of something when I know I'm not? Mm-hmm. So how do I get around that? Well, it should have been an Alford plea, because that's what it is. But when they allowed me to write a statement, and that statement paragraph didn't have me confessing to anything wrong, said I received, after I'd already received, nothing about knowing about it, then I felt comfortable that I had not lied about doing something wrong. So I ended it.
Yeah. And then in return, your record would be expunged in 12 months.
Right. They said, pay us whatever you had in the bank account, which is another indication, you know, there was $160,000 still left in the campaign at the end of the day. So we didn't need any money. I wasn't out there asking anybody for money. I sure as hell didn't need somebody to be giving their kids money to give to the campaign. It was just unnecessary. It was illogical that it would happen. And the facts don't support any of the charges.
I always remember the picture of you going to the court late at night?
It was after business hours, after business. But that was set up by the court, or somebody apparently negotiated that so we wouldn't be down there in the crush of the day.
There you were. What a feeling that had to be for you.
It was awful. It's terrible. Embarrassing. But it was, you put one foot in front of the other and you think, okay, we're going to put this behind us and then we're going to move on and we'll do other good things.
And you did, of course. But you've also said, I'll never run for office again. Is that the way you put
it? Well, I don't know.
You wouldn't run for re-election.
Yeah, I decided not to run for re-election. We polled it and, you know, it wasn't out of the question, but I'd had enough and it was time to move on and have somebody else. The interesting thing is part of that decision not to run was it would have been a brutal campaign and terribly negative and all the rest. But, you know, incumbents have some power in that process. But literally what I did was I made a list of everything I set out to do. And I had done about 3/4 of everything on that list. So I thought, why would I go through this again? Having got that much done in that short a period of time, I think I'll go to the farm. And then I got sucked into a U.S. Senate race later on.
You did.
That's a whole other story.
And we'll touch on that.